from David Huckfeldt's latest album, Stranger Angels. Welcome to New Music, David.
Hi, Kari. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
So, founding member of the Pines, out with a new solo album now, Stranger Angels. You're playing a free show in Duluth this Friday at Blacklist Brewing, also part of this next year's Center Stage Minnesota lineup. We're really excited to have you come back north again, even though you come often, but it'll be nice to have you back.
Well, one of these times I'm just going to stay, honestly. I mean, it's getting closer every year. I really think so. As much as we've been up in Ely and Grand Marais, and I wrote the record on Isle Royal, I just want to say how much I love it up there, and I love the radio station, too.
So, yeah, let's talk about Isle Royal, because you wrote the album came out of an artist-in-residence program at Isle Royal on Lake Superior. Tell us a little bit about the island.
Well, the island is, it's like no place else on Earth that I've ever been. I had a couple of previous visits out there to hike and to backpack, and I was out there 3 years ago when there were still a few wolves, and I could hear them all night long. So I had this relationship with the island, and I knew I wanted to come out and spend more time. And I found out about this artist in residency program, which for anybody anywhere up north that is a painter, a poet, a photographer, the Park Service has these residencies where they set you up in a cabin and they let you work for up to 3 weeks, and they really leave you alone out there so you can immerse yourself. So I was there 2 weeks. I wrote 16 songs. Every day I felt like I'd go a little deeper into the place and a little deeper into the songs. And it's a true gift, I think, in today's busy world to someone to hand you that much solitude and beauty in one place.
So. Right. So you normally write with your bandmates, the Pines. So this was for a solo record. Did you find yourself going deeper into the depths of your soul for these kind of songs?
I think so. I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is that what prevents most music from happening, what prevents most songs, what prevents even like kind words between people or any kind of change is a lack of time, you know, and a lack of space. So for me, I knew I wanted to make a solo record. I knew I wanted to have a cohesive kind of statement come just from me alone, but you don't know what that is until you get a chance to work with it and go deep with it. And the island gave me that perfect opportunity. I feel like I finished ideas that I never would have finished, experimented in ways. I mean, it's great. Collaboration is great. It's difficult, but the solo experience is a whole other ball game because it's all riding on you, and you can present your vision very coherently if you're careful about it, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I imagine the whole solitude aspect of it. I mean, you were just kind of talking about the busyness of this world, but also just the connectedness, the constant connectedness with our phones, with everything. I would imagine as an artist, it would be very interesting to get yourself into a place where you don't have those distractions and you're just kind of there with your own self and kind of see where that goes. I would find that to be an interesting practice and test.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, the internet and being connected, I think it hits artists particularly hard or in a hard spot, because in order to keep pace and try to keep making, you know, making songs and original music and art, you have to be in constant contact. But at a certain point, you realize that, you know, if you want to catch the big fish, you got to go away from the shallow part and get out there a little ways. And so anytime you see a musician who's touring or traveling or really doing this, you know, we have so many great ones in Minnesota, and Charlie Parr and Trampled and Low. You know, I think it's important to understand that it's really hard for all these people to keep up and to get to the kind of songs that really matter. You have to kind of buck the trends of the world and go deep. And it's rewarding, but it also can be really difficult because you can't just stop on a Tuesday afternoon between yoga and happy hour and scribble down a few brilliant lines. You really have to wrestle with it, you know, find a place to do that. So
I love that analogy. When you want to catch the big fish, you need to go deeper, stay away from the shallow. There is so many so many ways that you can incorporate that into today's world. I think that that's a great statement. I might steal it from you.
Yeah, you can have it. It's not even mine. I feel like, I mean, and maybe Northern Minnesota, are you guys up there, like, you know, trying to protect boundary waters and trying to take care of the water and stuff. You might be used to people idealizing life, you know, up there, but mm-hmm. Or maybe you get tired of city dwellers coming up to relax, but I guess I know how important the work is to have places to go that belong to everyone, parks, state parks, national parks. It's so valuable. You know, there's a song on the new record called The Lost 40, which comes from...
we know The Lost 40.
The Lost 40. Yes. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like, how magical is that place? And right. How grateful for those who have protected it, so it's a place you can visit. It's good for the imagination.
Yeah. We're talking with David Huckfeldt today on New Music, founding member of The Pines. He's out with the solo album Stranger Angels, playing a free show in Duluth this Friday at Blacklist Brewing, and is also part of this next year's Center Stage Minnesota lineup. So kind of on that note, David, your album, you talk a lot about climate change and just the natural world, and you've been a staunch advocate of clean water. This is sort of a weird question, would you still be in the music industry if you weren't able to speak your mind? Like, what if that was stifled?
Oh, it would be, yeah. There would be, madness in the streets, so to speak. I've never believed that, I mean, art, by its very nature, is political, and that doesn't mean that every song has to hammer a message, and it doesn't mean that it's not a celebration of life for its own sake. But I think that, you know, as we look at the major challenges we're up against as a country, there's a role, there's speaking and there's listening. And some people can speak in different ways. And some people, if you have a stage, if you have an audience, I think there's a way to honor it, to do both. You know, I look at Winona LaDuc. I just played her festival in Duluth a couple weeks ago. And, mm-hmm. You know, there's someone who knows how to speak and knows how to listen. And, you know, even what she said, the concert for Honor of the Earth, it's not a protest necessarily. What it is it's a celebration because there's Lake Superior, and we want to keep it clean, and mm-hmm. We need water every day of our lives. So I don't think I could function, you know, I wouldn't let anybody tell me or my friends that they were not able to speak clearly their minds. But I think there's a way of speaking that is inclusive and not divisive.
Right.
And I'm not out to point fingers at anyone or make enemies, because we all have to figure it out together. So music can play a role in that, because music is meant as a celebration and to connect. So it's got an important job in the whole mix.
For your new album, you had a lot of friends, names that are very familiar to us here at KAXE, KBXE, like Amelia Meath, Sylvan Esso and Mountain Man, JT Bates, Eric Koskinen, Dave Simonette, Frankie Lee, Phil Cook, and I could go on. Going into the studio to record, did you already have ideas of like who you wanted to play on what song, or was it more loose than that?
You know, it was more loose than perhaps, you know, which song, but I found a notebook page of mine going back a couple years before the session with a list of the human beings that I wanted to be in the room, you know, and mm-hmm. It's all those people you just mentioned. I like the idea, it's planned spontaneity. Mm-hmm. If you get the right people in the right place, you don't have to tell them what to do, you know.
Right.
And it fits with the theme of the record to me, you know, Stranger Angels. There's a lot of meanings for that. You know, there's the moose, calves out on Isle Royal dancing around in the moonlight on the night cameras, and marginal species and things we need to protect. But it's also these friends of mine, these musicians who are brave enough to try to make a living by their art and who show up and kind of contribute to the greater good. Like all these guys you just mentioned are strange angels to me. I just got off the phone with Eric Koskinen before you called, and he said to say hello.
Nice.
To you.
Oh yeah.
And he's the kind of guy, like, if that guy's coming to your recording session, you should thank your lucky stars, because he brings so much with him, and everybody on this record brought so much generosity and no ego. It really, we just wanted to make this beautiful thing together.
So the video you got of one of the songs that's on Stranger Angels is one of my favorites from this past year. It features you and your band with Eric and Frankie and JT Bates and Jeremy Elvisacker playing in a dance hall in, it looks like, a rural Midwestern town. And the characters, quote unquote, in the video are totally normal Midwestern folks, couples smiling, dancing, having a night on the town with sparkly shoes and cowboy hats. Honestly, if you're looking for a smile today, that you should go Google that video, listeners, because it's just a lovely piece of work. So, and then I watched at the end, it looks like you filmed this in an Eagles club in Minneapolis. I definitely thought this was more of a rural vibe. So, like, how did you find the dancers and the people?
Well, that's, I mean, the reason it is so special is because it is a rural community vibe, but it's hidden right in the city.
Yeah.
So many years ago, Michael Rossetto, the guitar and banjo player, he and I happened to stumble into the Eagles Club on a Sunday, and in that back room, it's just the most gentle, unpretentious, beautiful scene of people young and old dancing to country music.
Yeah.
That's a live band, and it could be, you know, it could be any year. It could be 1958, 68, any time. And so when it came time to think of a video for You Get Got, you know, I didn't want to do something that was canned necessarily or plotted or planned out or staged. I just wanted to have us perform for those people live in that room and hope that they would enjoy it enough to dance, which they did. And so it was really just us, you know, actually those people are not actors. They are just regular folk who love to dance and love music, and that's kind of the charm of it.
Absolutely. So did you guys, were you the band for that night? Did you play like, not, you didn't just film your one song and then leave? Did you play multiple, like a set for them?
We did. Yeah, we did. The house band let us do a couple sets. And
very cool.
If you have Eric and Frankie and JT, those guys are there. They know how to get people up and moving. So we played Waylon Jennings songs and Roger Miller songs and some Eric songs and just let people dance all afternoon. It was really great.
I told him the last time the gift flowers store-bought, sometimes you get love, sometimes you get God, sometimes you get love, sometimes you get God.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your connection to the Native community. And you've been a devoted friend to communities throughout the nation. In fact, you're going to play a show with Annie Humphrey for our upcoming Center Stage Minnesota concert series in November. This is, I'm sure, a question that's maybe a little difficult to answer because it's so maybe very broad, but maybe a couple things that you've learned in working with the Native communities around the nation.
I've learned, first and foremost, is that there's just about nothing more annoying or asinine in the world than a white person or someone trying to tell a Native person about their culture. That's a thing that happens so much more than you could ever realize. It's the situation that makes the most sense to me is, you know, Vine Deloria, the great Native author, has a book called We Talk, You Listen. And when it comes to any variety of issues, you know, going on for land rights, treaty rights, water rights, the Native voice has been drowned out and ignored for so long that it really takes conscious effort to make space for it. And events like Standing Rock, they're example of Native peoples taking back their power. You know, something John Trudell talked about all the time. Mm-hmm. When we work with him. So that's what I've learned. And also, I think what I've learned is really taking the long view on everything. It's just not how most of us in America are brought up, with very, very short-term goals and very short-sighted as far as the future goes. That's kind of how we get into some of the biggest messes that we get into. So
right.
I can remember getting ready for a show with Keith Cicola, you know, and mm-hmm. and there was construction at the venue, and there wasn't a lot of people in there yet, and it was running late and everything, and Keith just pointed over and he said, you know, we're playing on the banks of the Mississippi River, and we were in downtown Minneapolis. He said, how beautiful is that? Mm-hmm. And that made a lot more sense than worrying about any of the other stuff going
yeah.
on, you know. The gratitude that goes with that is pretty big. So,
and you and Annie know each other. You've played together previously, right?
I love Annie Humphrey
yeah.
so much. I have so much respect for her bravery and her courage, her work as a water protector, and then just the fact that her songs, they always come back and land on love, you know, love for family, love for the land. So we know each other pretty well, and we're always excited when we get a chance to play together.
Okay, so two more things here, David. We're talking with David Huckfeldt today. You're playing a show at Blacklist Brewery this Friday, and you're playing with Billy Sedlmeyer. Can you tell us a little bit about Billy?
Yeah, I can. If anybody is anywhere near Duluth on Friday, it's a pretty special treat. Billy is from Tucson, Arizona, and I count him kind of foremost among the stranger angels that I've met in the last couple of years. He's a songwriter. He got into some trouble in his young adulthood, spent some time in prison, and is basically on a mission, I think, with his life now to make amends and to redeem his lost time and the people he's hurt, and he's doing it through music. So I've heard, you know, thousands and thousands of songwriters over the last 10 years, but when I heard Billy at a little bar in Tucson, I was literally just knocked out, and we had a three-hour breakfast together in Tucson where he told me story after story from his life, and it started to make sense why his voice was so unique. And I agreed. I said, well, let's get you up to Minnesota where they've never heard of you, and he was really excited to come back up here with me and do some shows. It's a real treat. It's the first time it's ever happened. It might be the last time. I hope not. But there's shows in Minneapolis and in Stillwater this weekend and in Duluth on Friday.
Very cool. So the last thing, you posted a great picture on social media last week, I think. It was you and Frankie Lee and Dave Simonette watching Greg Brown perform at the Seed Savers Benefit concert.
Yeah.
Which it looked like heavy hitters in Minnesota music in awe of Mr. Brown. And we have a long history with him here at the station. And I know he's had a big impact on you and your band in the Pines. Can you talk a little bit about that connection?
Yeah, with the, you know, the history being so short-sighted, a lot of people don't realize what Greg has done for young songwriters. He's almost in a category on his own, showing us how you can have integrity, how you can not get caught up in the uglier aspects of the music business, and how you can keep your sights on what poetry is good for in people's lives. I mean, people listen to Greg Brown when they put their babies to sleep and when they go on long drives and all these poignant moments in their lives. It's not, you don't hear it at the gas station while you're pumping your gas. And, you know, Greg is incredibly humble and incredibly generous. And I think he knows that in order for things to continue, you know, another generation has to take up. And I hope he knows how much he's inspired songwriters, people I know, because he literally is one of the best that there's ever been and has set down the story of the Midwest and Iowa and natural spaces and wilderness. And it just, he's an alchemist. He makes magic happen when he plays and sings. So that was a pretty special moment. He's not going to be doing a lot more shows. He's retiring.
Okay.
So he says. So it was great to see him on the farm in Iowa. It was beautiful.
We've been talking with David Huckfeldt today on New Music. Check out his free show in Duluth Friday night at Blacklist Brewing along with Billy Sedlmeyer. Thank you so much, David, for talking with us.
Kari, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for showing support for Minnesota music and just playing such great stuff on the air. It's really not lost on us down here.
That's good.
Who are doing it. So thank you.
No problem. We're actually going to play your friend Frankie right now off of his new album.
Oh, good.
Here we go. This is Speakeasy.